This is River to River. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. It's Politics Day, and we're analyzing the latest from the presidential campaigns and state politics. Two political scientists, co-colleges Bruce Nesmith and UNI's Donna Hoffman, will be commenting on the strategies President Obama and Republican Mitt Romney are using to portray each other's qualifications to lead the nation during the next 4 years. Both candidates showing that Iowa is important to them. And when they're not here, who are the surrogates carrying the campaign messages? And we'll also be talking about the Ron Paul influence in Iowa's Republican Party, especially with the GOP state convention coming up this weekend. Politics Day on River to River, right after the NPR News. Dean Borg with River to River, and our guests, Donna Hoffman, who heads the political science faculty at the University of Northern Iowa. She's in our studios in Cedar Falls. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Dean.
And Bruce Nesmith is here. He's with me in the studio in Iowa City. He's professor of political science at the Co-College in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Dean.
Well, Donna, what are the emerging principal issues in the presidential campaign? We normally say that after Labor Day, things really heat up. I don't think they can get much hotter.
Well, you know, we do usually say after Labor Day, things heat up. That's really when, you know, certain people, especially those swing voters who aren't paying a lot of attention now, start paying attention. So that plays into that a bit. But, you know, I think at that point, as well as right now, the concerns really are on the economy and what presidents can do and what President Obama has done in trying to improve the economy. And so really that's not an emerging issue. That's a continuing issue.
That's right.
And I think that will continue to be the major issue. And you know, we know that's important to voters when they cast their ballots in November.
But do you see the president, Donna, wanting to talk about the economy?
You do. I mean, I think that, you know, unfortunately for him, he had that gaffe earlier in the week about trying to talk maybe in a more nuanced way than people want to hear quite yet about the private sector versus the public sector. And he really has to show that he understands the concerns of everyday Americans. And that's what Romney's really trying to paint him as, is someone who doesn't understand those concerns. And, you know, Obama's trying to paint Romney kind of in the same way. But he is talking about the economy in a kind of trying to talk about it in a nuanced way, because he really has to, because that is the concern of voters. But he has to be careful in how he talks about that.
Well, since you mentioned that gaffe, what you're referring to is this past week marked the first in what's sure to be a series of gaffe wars in the presidential campaign. And I think what you're referring to is a new news conference on Friday, President Obama addressing the financial crisis in Europe and his plans to grow the economy after newly released unemployment figures showed the U.S. had more job losses. And making his comments, he also said this.
The private sector is doing fine. Where we're seeing weaknesses in our economy have to do with state and local government. Oftentimes, cuts initiated by governors or mayors who are not getting the kind of help that they have in the past from the federal government.
You always kind of worry when there's a pause in someone speaking like that. I want to go on, because that line, what the president said, that the private sector is doing fine, became the soundbite of the week, even though hours later the president kind of backtracked on that statement, campaigning in Council Bluffs. Presumptive Republican nominee Mitt Romney had this to say.
He said the private sector is doing fine. He said the private sector is doing fine. Is he really that out of touch? I think he's defining what it means to be detached and out of touch with the American people.
But in those same remarks, Mitt Romney also said this.
And his answer for economic vitality, by the way, was, of course, pushing aside the private sector, which he said is doing fine. Instead, he wants to add more to government. He says we need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? The American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government and help the American people.
Well, Bruce, both the campaigns have television and internet ads now trying to capitalize on those maybe gaffes. I don't know if they rise to that level or not, but I'll let you say, how big a mess did each of the candidates step in?
It's hard to say immediately. I think what you do when you say something that doesn't come across the way you want it to is to revise and maybe come up with a new message. And so time will tell whether the candidates can come up with a new way to package what they're essentially trying to say. Both statements were essentially accurate. You can argue about what the threshold of fine is or is not, but both statements are essentially accurate. They just come across as kind of tin-eared.
Yeah. What do you think, Donna? Is one more damaging than the other?
Well, you know, I think, again, a lot of political speech is to be properly understood, and this is the case with these two examples, you have to listen to more than just the soundbite. You have to put it in context. You have to get the nuance. And as Bruce was saying, that is the case in both of these cases. When you listen to the whole remarks, you understand what the speakers were trying to get across. But when it's snipped out,
yes,
that's a little bit less the case. And so, you know, what the trap that Romney fell into in this regard is that, yes, people seem to be wanting smaller government. But, you know, most people on the street, if you ask them who are the government employees, you know, that you don't like, that you want to shrink government, it's not going to be the firefighters and the police officers and the teachers, because they think of faceless bureaucrats when they talk about shrinking government, not the government people that they actually come into day-to-day contact to. And so, you know, the candidates have to understand how their statements are going to be taken out of context, because they know that's going to happen. And I think, you know, part of the reason you saw President Obama pausing in that clip that you played and being very deliberate was because he is very conscious of that. But even the best, you know, speakers make mistakes.
Yes. You know, political strategists, Bruce, attempt to define the opposing candidate early in the campaign and put the opposition on the defensive. As you analyze now President Obama's campaign, how is he attempting to define Mitt Romney in voters' perceptions?
Well, I think, you know, the two points they want to make about Romney is, one, that he is from a wealthy class, that he is not a small businessman or anything like that, but he's from the upper reaches of the financial sector. And secondly, that he is that is where his sympathies lie, that his business experience has not been in helping people at all walks of life, but of making more money for the upper reaches of the financial sector.
Donna, isn't the president's campaign also attempting to take away some of the strengths that would be presumed for Governor Romney?
Well, sure. Romney wants to run on his, you know, he's not really running on his record in Massachusetts as governor. He really wants to run on his business record. And, you know, the Obama campaign is trying to attack his strengths. And that's what, you know, good political operatives will tell you, how you should do that. And so he's trying to erode that thing that Romney really wants to run on. Romney wants to run less on his time as Massachusetts governor, I think, because inevitably one will get to a discussion of what Romney did in Massachusetts. And one of the things Romney did was health care reform in Massachusetts that's very, very similar to health care reform at a national level. And then when Romney talks about that, you know, he has to be, again, you get this nuance. He has to be very nuanced, and he takes the position that, you know, in Massachusetts, what we did was appropriate at the state level, but it's not at the national level. And that's, you know, that then people have to listen longer. You can't talk in sound bites when you start talking about that kind of thing.
And I saw a television ad last night by the Obama campaign targeting exactly the Romney record in, whether or not it's correct, I have no fact checking on that, but attacking the Romney record in Massachusetts, Bruce.
Yes, you know, the job creation numbers are funny things, and they seem to me awfully slippery. I think maybe an economist could speak to them better. But Romney was governor from, 2003 to 2011, and so began at a time when the economy was coming out of recession and then governed into a period when it was back in recession. So his, you know, his numbers don't look awfully good, but I don't think that there was any state in the union during that time where the job creation numbers are particularly impressive.
On the other hand, now let's go to Mitt Romney attempting to define President Obama. Where do you see what do you see the principal themes there, Donna?
Romney, you know, really wants to paint Obama as not getting it, not understanding concerns of people, not understanding how to fix the economy. And so, you know, in the clip that you played of Romney's remarks, that's what he was, you know, trying to get at, is that that Obama doesn't understand. We want less government. We don't want more government. We want less government. And so he really wants to try to use what Obama has done in the last 3 years as an indicator of, you know, look at the things he's done. He doesn't understand what the American public wants. And I do. I understand what the American public wants. And I understand, furthermore, how to fix the economy because I'm a businessman. And that's why he, again, wants to stress that aspect of his record, I think.
But the people who are going to be going to the polls are listening to you as analysts this morning, and I'm going to invite them to weigh in here. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-780-9100. What do you think about the presumed gaffes or missteps that we played just a little bit ago? Are they important to you? What's your impression of the statements and the TV ads that you're seeing on either side? Are you at all concerned, and have they swayed your opinion? In fact, we might just mention here the Rasmussen poll that's just out shows this is a neck-and-neck race in Iowa. Romney, 47%. Obama, 46% of, I think it was 500 likely voters on June 11th were sampled. And so it shows that what was shown in a Des Moines Register poll way back in February pretty much still holding true. That poll showed 46% Romney, 44% Obama. So this is indeed a toss-up state, Bruce.
Yes, and I think there are some other polls that have varied around that, but pretty much we're looking at a close race, as it has been. Other than 2008, which was an unusual year, it has been quite close in Iowa since the 90s.
Let's take a caller. We invited them to call in. Let's see what Walt in Cedar Rapids has to say. Walt?
Yes. The problem with Romney, and it seems to be kind of going past the boards, is the fact that he is big business. That's what he did. That's what he earned. He doesn't want to refer to his governorship at all, apparently. The big business with the no regulation and the credit default swaps and everything else they piled up and structured so they weren't covered under any law is why we have the problem we have with the economy now, right up to the housing bubble and the housing defaults and everything like that. And they want to vote for him? I can't understand what they're thinking.
What I might ask you, Walt, the NPR News just preceding our River to River program here showed the drop in May retail sales again, lackluster economic growth, and Governor Romney coming back and saying that the economic situation in this country right now is tepid, and he is saying, if I'm elected, I'm going to remove government regulations and we're going to heat up this economy. Does that resonate with you?
Not at all. He's going to remove regulations. We're going to go down to $5 an hour minimum wage. No safety net for anybody. The jobs have to be out there. He can't create those out of thin air. And that's a problem with the economy, I think, going forward on so many levels, whether it's housing or manufacturing, the things we've given up and thrown away and moved out of the country. Now it's coming home to kind of bite us because the Republicans basically are the ones that wanted all this out the door. They maximize profits, they minimize their costs and everything, and I can understand that from a business sense, but I can't understand it from a national sense of creating the economy here. I think they want to sell all their products to the Chinese that are up and coming now, and they're going to just let the Americans go by the wayside.
Thanks for your comments. That is Walt calling in from Cedar Rapids. The number to call is 866-780-9100. A lot of surrogate campaigning here when the candidates aren't here, and Governor Romney, I think, is coming back to Iowa over in LeClaire along the Mississippi River in the Quad Cities area. I think coming back on Monday, if I'm correct on that. He was just on the western side of the state earlier this week. But when they aren't here, they've got surrogates campaigning, and particularly the Tom Vilsack spending an awful lot of time in Iowa, Bruce. He's traveling with Bruce Braley earlier this week, talking about the farm bill. He's got a conference call this afternoon at 1 o'clock announcing rural Iowans for Obama. And his presence here is very, very prominent.
Well, Tom Vilsack is one Democrat that has a large amount of credibility and appeal across the political spectrum. So he's about as big of a muscle as the Democrats can have in the Hawkeye State.
I'm going to take another call here, and then we'll go back and talk about surrogates in just a minute, Donna. But I'm going to bring on Tom from Van Horn. Tom?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. My question and comment is that Willard Romney keeps talking about deregulating and let business flourish. But when we deregulated the banks, the commercial side and the investment bank side in 99 by repealing the Glass-Steagall Act, that Jim Leach, Dick Armey, and Phil Graham ramrodded. And then they also passed another law in 2001 that Graham co-signed on that was wrote by lobbyists. That preceded the meltdown of 2008 with the control fault derivative, the derivative swaps. I'm not up on all the phrases and terms, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yep, I do. Well, and I've got your point there. I'm going
why
to
would Mr. Romney, there, Willard Romney, keep talking about deregulating everything? That's what happened to the meltdown when Bush was president, because they let it run free and wild, and
so
nobody's controlling anything or watching it. And
I take it if you were called today, your preference would be, in a poll, would be for reelecting President Obama.
I don't see how we have any choice.
Okay. Mark, you're in Des Moines. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes. I'm 73. I've lived through some of this. And my viewpoint is both the Democrats, both the Republicans, most of the people that are in government, city, county, whatever it is, and the citizens of this country have lost touch. We're living in a la-la land. We've lived in this la-la land so long, we think it's normal, and we don't want to deal with realities.
So what?
So we dance. Around the edges.
Mark, coming up to this election then, Mark, you're saying both sides have lost touch. Then what do you recommend?
If Pat Paulson was still alive, I'd vote for him because he's a real comedian.
Thanks for weighing in today. Thanks, Mark. Well, we were talking, Donna, and said I'd come back to you on surrogate campaigning. Tom Vilsack doing a lot of campaigning here and practically living here instead of in Washington during this campaign season. On the other hand, Republican Governor Terry Branstad seems increasingly involved in the presidential campaign, too, commenting on Tuesday he made this little quip. He said, in Iowa in 2008, we launched President Obama on his way to the White House, and in Iowa in 2012, we're going to sink him. So both have passionate surrogates on their side.
Certainly. And, you know, here's one of the interesting things with Tom Vilsack is that, you know, he's not here officially as a surrogate. He's here officially as Secretary of Agriculture, and he's doing his official job. And he's talking about the farm bill that's working its way through Congress. And he happens to be a well-respected Democrat in the state of Iowa, and Iowa happens to be important in the election. And this is one of the advantages you have, you know, essentially as an incumbent president, is you have these people working for you that can go out and talk about politics that they know, or excuse me, I should say policy that they know, you know, these things about. On the other hand, you have surrogates like Governor Branstad, who's supporting Romney, and he's in an official capacity in the state as well. But surrogates can also, you know, they're people, they make mistakes. They also have ideas, and sometimes they don't always mesh with the candidate. And so you can have problems with surrogates, and we've seen some of this in campaigns recently where the surrogate says something and then they have to walk it back. The campaign has to put it into context, and it can divert the focus that the campaign might want to have on an issue sometimes. So surrogates can be both beneficial, but they can also be problematic sometimes if they get off message, so to speak.
But also, Tom Vilsack comes into Iowa, an important state in this election, a swing state, but also coming into an economy that's not as much as other states. The farm economy here, very strong. He is acting, and as you pointed out, in his official role as Ag Secretary. And so it's a very effective role that he's playing, Donna.
Oh, certainly it is. And, you know, one of the advantages that it has in the state of Iowa is that the economy here is better than in a lot of other states. And that may give him an advantage into this very close election in November.
Bruce, let's go back to the economy. I mentioned farm economy. But overall, is the continued depressing economic news, I'm using a pejorative term there, perhaps depressing, but it's not encouraging, at least, the economic reports, unemployment and retail sales and things like that. Do you see that at all as being depressing on the Obama campaign?
I think it is. And I think a good thing that to point to is the 2010 gubernatorial election. Iowa was in comparatively good shape in 2010, but it didn't help the incumbent Democratic governor who lost pretty decisively. I think a lot of commentators, including people in the Obama campaign, have said that Obama needs to be something more than not the evil Mitt Romney, that he needs to have some kind of positive message about where we've been and where we're going. And that, I think, we've yet to hear formulated.
Okay. Aaron is on the phone from Dubuque. We're going to bring him on the line. Aaron, go ahead.
Hi.
What do you have to contribute to the discussion?
You know, I've got a little bit of an interesting perspective. I've worked both in the private sector, the public sector, and in the nonprofit sector. And what I'm really trying to understand is this, really it's looking to be both parties, this mentality that the private sector creates jobs. I've run a business. I understand that the entrepreneurial spirit and the private sector in this country doesn't hire until they absolutely have to. Your job is to make as much money as you possibly can and squeeze as much productivity out of each employee as possible. That's what small business in this country is. So we don't hire until the market forces us to. And the market doesn't force us to until the people who need to spend that money have that money. So just that whole idea is kind of ludicrous to me. I'd really like to have an economist explain to me how that works, because in my mind, if you look at it logically, until money gets put in the hands of the people in the middle class, there are no jobs created. The market creates jobs, and until there's money in the market,
all right,
not sitting in the bank accounts of large corporations,
Aaron,
it's not going to happen.
Thanks so much. We've got your point, and I'm going to move quickly because we're running out of time here before we take a break, but I want to bring Wally on, and he's calling us from Bradford. Go ahead, Wally.
I'd like to ask your guests for their input on a little historical perspective. I think historians agree that Herbert Hoover had very little to do with actually bringing about the Great Depression of the 30s, but he was certainly held accountable in subsequent elections. In many ways, I think Bush-Cheney had pretty well driven the economic bus into the ditch on the day that Obama took office. And you can roll, you know, all that deregulatory business. You can
Wally?
Take the Bush-Cheney years and you can add in Clinton.
Wally,
but
thanks. We've got to take a break, and we have your point, and thanks for calling us from Bradford. We're going to take a break now for the news. River to River will continue, and we'll be commenting on those points that our listeners made after the break. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Dean Boren continuing the exchange, and with me, Donna Hoffman, who heads the political science faculty at the University of Northern Iowa. She's in our studios in Cedar Falls. Bruce Nesmith is here in Iowa City in our studios, and he's professor of political science at Coe College in Cedar Rapids. And just to give you who are listening a little billboard of the topics that we're going to be discussing in this coming half hour, we'll be talking about the influence of Health Care Reform Act on the campaign and some of the things that are happening. We'll be also hoping to touch on the Republican State Convention coming up this Saturday and some of it a struggle within the party right now over the influence of the Ron Paul candidacy in Iowa. And
the influence on the Iowa Republican Party. And if we can, you heard on the news that Dennis Reese just had about Governor Terry Branstad renewing the discussion about state employees paying a little bit of their health care premium. We hope to touch on that if we have time. But right now, let's talk about that Health Care Reform Act, which undoubtedly will be one of the primary issues in the coming campaign. The Romney campaign, again, seized on this as an example of the president not understanding, as they put it, the effect of his decisions on small business. And here's the context of what happened. The president is inviting in regional television reporters to the White House, and in that regard, Sioux City television station KTIV interviewed the president at the White House about the economy. And one of the questions raised by the interviewer was about a Sioux City business called Nemstoff's Chairs that's closing its Iowa plant due to what they describe as confusion brought on by the health care reform law. Now, here's how the president responded.
Yeah, that'd be kind of hard to explain.
Right.
The only folks that have been impacted in terms of the health care bill mm-hmm. are insurance companies who are required to make sure that providing preventive care right. or they're not dropping your coverage when you get sick. And so this particular company probably wouldn't have been impacted by that.
So, Donna Hoffman, again, health care coming into this campaign. And how is each campaign going to use the health care issue as you see it?
Well, you know, I think a lot will hinge on what happens in the coming weeks whenever the Supreme Court decides they're going to publicize the decision that they're going to make on that particular case that's before them. And that will frame a lot of what goes forward. And so, you know, the candidates waiting for that, I think, in a large degree. Because
But isn't that an issue, Donna, that also poses problems for Mitt Romney?
Certainly. It poses problems for both the candidates. You know, Mitt Romney, with RomneyCare, if you will, in Massachusetts, had a lot of these same things. The mandate, for example, that's before the Supreme Court, that's in the national level bill, the Affordable Care Act that passed under President Obama. And so there's a lot of similarities there. And Romney has to walk a very fine line in talking about what he did in Massachusetts and how that is similar and dissimilar from what was done at the national level. And you know, so what? But the debate will be framed going forward into the election, though, on what the Supreme Court decides. And if they uphold it, the individual mandate in particular, if they strike down parts of the act, if they keep all of the act, if they keep parts of the act. And that's very complex. And the candidates, you know, will have to decide how they're going to go forward in the context of what the Supreme Court hands down.
And Bruce, that is a key thing, what she just said. They have to decide how they're going to go forward, depending on what the Supreme Court says, decides on this. Is either one of the candidates have a greater desire to have the Supreme Court decision in one way or the other?
Well, that's a difficult question. I can't imagine that the way, from the Obama campaign's perspective, that that were the act struck down, that there is a way clear to get some kind of replacement legislation in. So I think that whatever short-term political benefit they may get from that, the long-term policy benefit is clearly zero or even negative. From the Romney campaign's perspective, there are arguments either way. If the Supreme Court strikes the legislation down, it gives an indication that President Obama is off to the left of where America should be and where the law should be. And, you know, we got the scary health care law out of the way, but we still have the president to get out of the way. If the law is not struck down, then the only way we get rid of it is to replace the president.
Some curious things, Donna, though, that, you know, when people are asked and polled about the individual provisions of the Federal Health Care Reform Act, they're overwhelmingly in favor of some of those provisions, like keeping the children on until they're age 26 on the parents' health care policies. But they have an overall opinion of the law overall. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I think part of the problem here, and this has been pointed out by many before, is that the Obama administration did not do a very good job talking about the key aspects of the bill once it came out. And they were very they took an interesting perspective in putting the bill together. They let Congress do that, and Congress put the individual pieces in there. They had broad, you know, general ideas as to what they wanted to see there. But once the bill was accepted and written into law, the Obama campaign did not do a very good job in telling people what the aspects of it were. And it is all really a package. At least that's how the Obama administration sees it, that if the mandate is struck down, that's a key aspect of, you know, getting the insurance companies to buy into this and support this, in that if they were going to have to, you know, insure people regardless of their pre-existing conditions, that mandate had to be there so they could spread out the risk pool. And again, you get complexity here. And the Obama administration did not do a very good job in talking about that. But individual pieces of the health care bill are very popular. You know, you mentioned the one about kids staying on in 2014, the pre-existing condition element of that pops in. And there's just not a very good general awareness of the bill. And part of the problem is that the bill is rolled out in stages. It takes multiple years for various aspects of it to be implemented. And that's one of the difficulties of it as well.
I think the complexity does not sing and it does not sell well. I think the other problem or the other point I would want to make is that the individual mandate is very unpopular. Something like 15 to 20% of people in polls support that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go on here to another aspect. We may come back to a little bit to that later. But Governor Terry Branstad is renewing discussion, as we said, concerning state employees as it relates to doing away with free health insurance for those employed by state government. He told us last month during an Iowa Press interview on Iowa Public Television that he'd like to have state employees paying at least 20% of their health insurance premiums. And as he puts it, that puts a little skin in the game. Well, this isn't a new idea. The legislature didn't take it up during the last session. But the governor says that it'll be a position taken by the state in negotiating new contracts with unionized state workers, AFSCME, the American Federation of County, State, Municipal Employees, that's AFSCME, and those workers who are part of a collective bargaining group. As you see it, Bruce, is this brought on and emboldening the governor by what happened in Wisconsin?
I'm not sure it is, because I'm not sure that the result in Wisconsin was emboldening. Governor Walker did survive the recall effort, but lost the Republican majority in the Senate. And so he emerges not necessarily strengthened from that. I think that really what triggered the recall was not concessions, expecting specific concessions from the unions, but trying to take away collective bargaining, mm-hmm. that was a fighting words. I think what Branstad is doing is pretty typical and pretty straightforward. It's probably a good policy. It's one that I would support, and doing it through negotiations.
Donna, I'm wondering, though, put on your political science hat here as a strategist. The timing is rather curious during a political campaign for the governor to roll this out as an issue in state government when you've got legislators being elected, the control of the Iowa Senate may be up for grabs, and trying to elect a Republican state Senate. What about the timing in this?
If I was a political consultant, I would not be advising the governor to go down this particular path, because it is one that can inflame certain segments of the electorate, people who work in the public sector. And, you know, one of the justifications that the public sector workers give for why their contracts are negotiated the way they are, in terms of the health benefit in particular, is that, you know, their salaries are generally lower. They're in the public sector. Public sector salaries are generally lower than they would be in the private sector, especially when you hold education levels constant on that. And so this is one of those issues that can get some people really excited, and that might get them to the polls, whereas they might not otherwise. And, you know, we did not see maybe that dynamic in particular in the recall in Wisconsin, because the issue had come, gone. It certainly inflamed people. You had large, large demonstrations in Madison. The recall effort was mounted, but that recall effort takes time. And as time passes, that intensity of that issue, even though, you know, the intensity of that issue has faded a bit. So this is an issue that if Branstad wants to push it, could really get the public sector union, AFSCME in particular, excited about turning people out, talking to people about this issue and how it's important to them.
You talked about getting people excited. We'll see what Don in Iowa City, if he's excited or not one way or the other. Don, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I just found it weird that Terry Branstad would talk about fairness. This country depends on 1% of its population to take care of our combative engagement. And then we deny the survivors of those fiasco wars the benefits they're entitled to.
Well, how does that relate now? You're talking about...
Well, he's talking about fairness.
Veterans here, though. You're talking about veterans. We're talking about state employees paying a portion of their health care premiums.
Yes, but he used the question, is it fair for state employees? And I'm just taking that a step further. If he wants to talk about fairness, let's look at what's really unfair in this country.
All right. All right, Don, thanks for your comment. I'm going to move on here. And we're going to be talking now, if we can, turn our discussion to Republican State Convention, Bruce, coming up this Saturday. Somewhat of a struggle within the party over the influence of the presidential candidate, Ron Paul. And the Paul strategy seems to be the campaign isn't over yet. And they have moved into quite strong control within the Iowa Republican Party.
And the idea, I think there's a couple of ideas. One is to elect delegates to the national convention. It may be out of proportion to the votes that Dr. Paul got on caucus night back in January. And they've succeeded in doing that, at least at the sub-state levels in other states. Still probably not, given the number of caucus states, even if he was wildly successful in all caucus states, still probably not enough to change the outcome of the convention, but maybe give him a little bit of heft. And the other idea is to put the Republican Party in Iowa on record as taking a number of positions that might be more libertarian. I remember in the 1980s that there was a lot of effort from more evangelical and fundamentalist churches to put people in Republican positions. And I frankly don't remember that had much impact on state policy or on national policy.
I would add to that what Bruce said. What the evangelical Christians were very successful in doing in the Republican Party was getting people on the platform committee at the national level and putting their influence in there. And I think that's a similar strategy that the Paul people have. I think it's a long-term strategy where you build your organization. They paid attention to their organization. They paid attention to the enthusiasm that was important for Paul supporters. And they firmly believe in libertarian principles, and they want to work those into the party. And that's a long-term project. And so they have a long view here. And I think you might see some platform issues being brought up at the national level that you otherwise might not have if they didn't have a strong presence there. We saw, if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, one of the news stories was about the platform that the Iowa Republicans are going to put forward at the state convention on Saturday. And there were some planks in that clearly came from Paul supporters.
We may have some Paul supporters listening here, those who supported him in the caucuses or are going to the state convention this Saturday. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. What's your strategy? What would you consider to be a success at the state convention this coming Saturday? And how might the platform be influenced? You heard what Don Hoffman just said. What are your goals? So give us a call at 866-780-9100. Bruce, what are the – I know one of the points of contention is that the – you might say the rank and file, but largely very conservative Republican Party in Iowa is very concerned about the state office being taken over by Paul staffers now. Iowa Republican State Chairman A.J. Spiker was vice chairman of Ron Paul's Iowa campaign. Now he's hiring Ron Paul campaign staffers to key management positions at the state party headquarters?
I'm going to say I don't know in a long and circuitous manner. I would be interested to go back to the historical experience to see what impact earlier insurgent movements have had on state policy overall. I know this sort of thing happened 25 to 30 years ago. Did it impact Governor Branstad at all? Did it impact the kind of legislation that Republicans were passing when they had control of the state legislature? I'm not totally sure that this is bad for the Republican Party or traditional Republicans, or that it will have much resonance beyond who gets to sit in what chair.
Well, Donna, the governor did weigh in on that, and I'm reading a quote from him now when he was asked. He said, "I do think there's a lot of concern among Republicans about that," referring to the Paul influence in the Central Committee and at state headquarters. But Governor Branstad said, "But my focus is going to be on winning elections, and that's what we're going to work with Romney to carry the state." Go ahead, Donna.
Right. I think one of the dangers for the Republican Party in the convention that takes place this weekend is if divisiveness is in the fore. They really want to be unified. They want to be unified behind Romney, who's, you know, for all intents and purposes, the nominee. And they don't want to show to the public this kind of divisiveness that might be present. You have, you know, several factions within the Republican Party. You have what we might call, you know, mainline Republicans, old, very fiscally conservative Republicans. You have the Tea Party insurgents, and you have Paulites. And those aren't mutually exclusive categories by any means, but you do have different elements there that can bring that can show contention, and that's typically not seen as being something good for the party. You want to go into the national convention at the end of the summer being united around your nominee and moving forward, and to the extent that divisiveness shows up at the state level, but particularly at the national level, that can be problematic.
And I think, Donna, you've got it. Bruce, just building on what she's saying, some Republicans are fearing that have a dominant Ron Paul delegation, even though the delegates aren't bound at the national convention to any one candidate or another, it indicates Iowa Republicans are either fickle or they're confused. Michelle Bachmann winning the Ames straw poll, Mitt Romney first named the caucus winner, later at Santorum, and now the state delegation to the national convention, strongly Ron Paul, maybe. What are the implications of that?
That's a good question. It depends. I think to piggyback on what Donna said, I think it a lot depends on how it's managed and how it's discussed. If people go off to the convention as Ron Paul delegates, and there are other Republicans in Iowa screaming and yelling about that, then it's going to be a lot uglier than if the conflict is managed effectively.
I'm going to interrupt you just to bring Chad on from Webster City. He says he's a Paul supporter. Chad, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
What are you going to do at state convention?
Support Ron Paul.
Why?
Mainly, the main focus is to bring liberty back to the main discussion. I think that's been falling off on the Republican platform for quite a few years, especially, you know, as we pass things like the Patriot Act and the NDAA. These things clearly need to be looked at.
So is your goal then not so much Ron Paul as a candidate, but your goal is principle?
Yes, liberty, period. Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
And Donna Hoffman and Bruce Nesmith, who are here with us, have said that this is a long-term strategy?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, nothing happens overnight. None of the greatest movements ever have happened overnight. That's something that a lot of people have been asleep. Things have been good for a long time. We need to take a serious look where we're at, grab reality, and then choose to make and do something about it. But we're heading down some pretty scary paths on a lot of fronts, and it's important that we focus on freedom, because freedom is really, really coming under fierce attack from a lot of angles.
Chad, thanks so much for calling from Webster City. Donna, that seems to underscore what you were saying.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they really see this as a long haul. And, you know, Ron Paul is getting up there in years. His son Rand, however, who has recently endorsed Romney, is very young. He's in the Senate. He's seen as a rising star. And, you know, the things that the Paul supporters can, you know, if they can get items in the platform change the way of looking at things within the Republican Party. I mean, the long-haul strategy could be to position Rand Paul to run for president someday.
How do you see just the state and its role here, the state Republican Party? There are a lot of divisive issues within that party right now, Bruce. Is this just another one? And are they losing, in danger of losing focus on winning elections?
They may be. I don't think they need to be. I don't think there is in any state, even a state as relatively small as Iowa, I don't think there's any such thing as a homogeneous majority. So the job of a majority party is to manage conflict and diversity within the party.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for your comments. Donna Hoffman, thanks for being with us at the UNI studio.
Oh, you're welcome, Dean.
And Bruce Nesmith here in Iowa City. Donna heads the political science faculty at UNI, should say that. Bruce Nesmith is at Cole College, same role there. He's not heading, he's a professor of political science there. Rivered River is produced by Catherine Perkins, Alex Hoyer, and Emily Woodbury. Executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Assisted today by Allison Sullivan, Dennis Reese, and Phil Moss. I'm Dean Borg, and River to River is produced by Iowa Public Radio News.